This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is currently 61 degrees, kind of muggy outside, going up to 80 today, plenty of clouds, cloudy start, 40% chance for showers later on tomorrow, then 85% on Saturday. A lot of events planned, unfortunately. We'll have to see what happens with those. And then Sunday's looking pretty good, highs 82. They got a parade in Gretna. I think the only parade on the West Bank, in Gretna at least, this year. And we'll keep you updated as to festivals and weather and everything you need to know here on WWL. Zach Lemon joins us now, our friend curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium. How you doing, Zach?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Let me ask you this, and I might have asked you before, but I think it's everybody has a story, and I'd like to know, how does one become curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium? Because when you were a kid, when you were eight, I'm guessing you didn't. And they said, what do you want to be when you grow up, Zach? I'm guessing you didn't say curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium, which is a nice, prestigious position, and congratulations on having it. I'm sure you earned your way there, but I don't think that's what you said when you were a kid, right? Or did you?
I actually did.
Really?
Tommy, I think I'm one of those rare and lucky individuals who fell in love with something at a very young age and never fell out of love with it. And frankly, most kids like playing around with bugs. It's just that a lot of people grow into something else or different, and I did not. So
no,
I might
kidding.
Just be a big kid, but I'm very happy.
But you know what? I'm the same way, kind of like with radio and all. I knew kind of like from when I was 4 years old. I don't think it's time to tell my story, but let's stick with you. Let's talk about mosquitoes and the rain and this time of year and termites. We're getting into the springtime. What does that mean as it relates to bugs?
Well, insects in general are going to grow, eat food, develop more quickly, reproduce, all of these things when it is warmer. So when you live in a subtropical climate like we do, there's a long active season, really from early March until early November. You're going to see more insects and spiders and their close kin, other arthropods, doing their thing, whether it's indoors or outdoors, than in what passes for winter down here. Mm-hmm. And even when we have warm spikes in the winter, a lot of these animals are sort of hardwired not to resume that rapid development until it is over a certain temperature for a certain amount of days, or the amount of daylight in a 24-hour cycle has indicated that spring is here. So I think it's fair to say, even though our New Orleans weather in March can be up and down a lot, spring is here.
I want to open the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line, the audience here at 504-260-1870. If y'all have any questions about any type of bugs, insects, et cetera, when it comes to termites, what are we looking at for the swarm this year? Zach, do we know?
Well, we have more than one species of termite in New Orleans, but the introduced one that has given us the most trouble over the last few decades, as I think most of your listeners know, is the Formosan subterranean termite, which is Southeast Asian in origin. And for a while now, they've been problematic, although my understanding is that their populations are somewhat lower now than they were, say, just 20 years ago here in town and around New Orleans. I do not know if that's 100% accurate, and if so, why, but it's certainly been anecdotally, my observation, and I do poke around and look for bugs a lot. But we also have a terrific city department, New Orleans Mosquito, Termite, and Rodent Control, that monitors this stuff more closely. And they also will take calls from curious folks. folks in town. I mean, they serve the citizens of New Orleans. But I will tell you that Formosan and subterranean termites have a very distinctive swarming season and time and conditions under which they swarm. Typically, our first big Formosan subterranean termite swarm, big one, is around Mother's Day, so early May. And it will continue to be swarming season for them, big, heavy swarms through July. They will fly to light, but what really triggers them is when it's between 7 and 10 at night, it's very humid and not very windy. Those are the nights when you can kind of safely predict there might be a lot of them in the air.
When it comes to these big giant, somebody texted in these big giant mosquitoes, they call them. I don't know what they really are, mayflies, whatever. Do they eat mosquitoes? We get that every year. I get that question. I thought I'd pass it along.
I get
Daddy long legs, maybe?
Probably more of them. Yeah. Well, so the technical name for that animal is a crane fly. And in New Orleans, our crane fly population, the adults, they really make their presence known late February through around this time in March. I think everything was a little early this year. I think the warm weather that followed that snow we got on January 21st made plants and insects all move a little more quickly, just a little more quickly than usual. But anyway, crane flies, these things that look like giant mosquitoes, do have other common nicknames. Daddy long legs is a little confusing because some people use that for a close relative of a spider, and other people use them for a true spider, cellar spiders. So I like to stick with the word crane fly and remind people that they do not eat mosquitoes, nor do they take a blood meal from people. So they don't bite us, but they don't help us with our mosquito control problem. As adults, they're pretty short-lived. Some of them drink nectar from flowers, and many of them do not feed at all as adults.
So do we want to kill them or we don't, if they're in the house? What do you want to do ecologically?
I live and let live. Even from an anthropocentric standpoint, you know, crane flies are a net benefit and almost, well, there's no negative I can think of, except that, you know, you may not want a crane fly bouncing around in your house at night. And they're attracted to light, too. So if you have lights on and you open a door to, say, to let a pet out or go to your grill, you might get crane flies in your home, but they are not going to do anything problematic at all.
Let a pet out, go to your grill. You're living my life, Zach. I can tell you that because that just resonated. I never kill those big crane flies. Is that what you call them?
Yes.
That's name? Yeah. I never kill them because it always seemed terribly unfair. It's like, where's the challenge in this? What? It's like, you know what? Leave it alone. It's not hurting you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you said, where's the challenge? They are extraordinarily slow, awkward flyers, extraordinarily delicate. They're not chemically defended. I wonder why more of their adult population isn't consumed by predators. And you know that they have predators, of course, like almost all arthropods have something that's going to eat them on the regular. But, crane flies don't seem very well adapted for adult survivability.
It just seemed like I feel like a bully. It's like so terribly unfair. Why would you do that? Anyway, 7:21, we'll talk more about ecosystems and insects and your questions at 504-260-1870. We'll come back talking to Zach Lemon, our friend, curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium. He's always been buggy about bugs. 7:21, traffic now, WWL. 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking insects and bugs with friend Zach Lemon, curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium. Somebody texted in about what is the most nutritious insect, but I guess that would depend on who's eating it, right, Zach?
You had some music in the background at the beginning of that question, Tommy. What was the start of it?
Oh, you want to hear more music? Go ahead and play it, Tim. I'm just kidding. So listen, I'm playing. I'm teasing. Somebody wanted to know about what's the most nutritious insect, but I guess that depends on who's eating it, right? Or what is eating it?
Well, that's a very good question. When we serve insects at Audubon Insectarium, we give out free samples of edible insect dishes at Bug Appetit. We have lots of information about them, and including some laminated pages and some books. And there have been a lot of studies that have been done more recently than in the past about nutrition specifically. People who are only vaguely familiar with insects will come up to the counter and say, well, they've got a lot of protein in them, right? And it is not untrue that as a percent of their total dry body weight, insects have a lot of protein. But the protein, carbohydrate, and fat ratio differs, as everyone knows, between, say, a piece of beef and a piece of chicken and a piece of fish. And there's really no reason to expect that those differences wouldn't exist between a dragonfly, which is a predator, a caterpillar, which eats leaves, a termite that eats wood, and other insects with different diets, as well as just being built differently. So the answer about what is the most nutritious insect, I don't have a good answer to it. I can tell you that every 100 grams of cricket, which is what we serve the most of, house crickets, has about 13 grams of protein and 5 grams each of carbohydrate and fat. And from a nutritional standpoint for the average human, that is a good balance, which is to say that if you just had to eat crickets, you could do a lot worse nutritionally. So in fact, they're good for you.
Do you eat insects because you can or because it's a good idea?
That depends on who you are. If you're asking me, I like the dishes. I like the dishes that we make. What we do, though, at the Insectarium, knowing that a lot of people might be, shall we say, a little hesitant to expand their gastronomic horizons, we have dishes that have a little bit of bug mixed in with a lot of other stuff. And that way, the next time one of our guests is offered an insect to eat that's been prepared, they might say, well, I remember that thing at the Insectarium. That was pretty good. So, yeah, maybe just a handful of this, just without any extras, you know. So I personally like the taste of some insects a lot, just the bug, and others not so much. I'm the same way with, like most people, you know. I might like broccoli and not cabbage. So I like crickets. I don't care for a lot of beetle larvae, especially the scarabs. I don't care for katydids a lot, but I love honeypot ants and waxworms and dragonflies. It's variable.
You like to eat crickets, and you cannot lie. Tell me about midge flies. Somebody wants to know when midge flies are going to swarm over the lake. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I know about midges. I don't know about their timing all that well. The interesting thing about, well, midges are a type of fly, as are mosquitoes. This is all a big insect group. The scientific name is Diptera, which is from the Greek di, meaning two, and pteron, meaning wing. Interestingly, most adult insects have 4 wings. But flies, including mosquitoes, have only 2. The common midge is one family of midges that have adults that resemble mosquitoes a lot. So people frequently see common midges and they think to themselves, oh my gosh, there's 10,000 mosquitoes here. And they're actually looking at an insect that does not bite. But common midges definitely have what we would call a more synchronous emergence of adults than mosquitoes. So where mosquito populations can be thick, they don't get sick like common midges. And depending on where around Lake Pontchartrain you live, you can have the side of your boat, the side of your dock, the side of your house covered with common midges. And if you look online at a picture of a mosquito and a common midge, you will see differences in particular with the way they hold their wings at rest and the shape of their legs and how they hold them, especially their front legs. And if you're close enough to any of these insects to see them at all, if they're resting, you'll see those differences, and you'll know, oh, those are midges, nothing to worry about.
Zach, a pleasure as always. Zach Lemon, curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium, and technically they don't like to be called midges. They want to be called little bugs. We'll take a break for news now, WWL. 7:47, 13 till 8. Quickly to Darren Meyer, member of Louisiana Board of Regents. Talk about UNO, my alma mater, Newell Norman's alma mater, a lot of people that work at WWL's alma mater, Diane Newman, the boss lady, Clancy Dubo, said it built the middle class in New Orleans. I don't disagree. Welcome in, Darren Meyer, member of Louisiana Board of Regents. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Tell me what happened with UNO yesterday, and also put it in context with the Board of Regents and your role, the Board of Regents' role in all of what happens to UNO.
Okay, so the Board of Regents manages the 4 systems of Louisiana, the Louisiana Technical College system. We have the Southern University system, the University of Louisiana system, and an LSU system. So all 4 management boards report to the Board of Regents. We received a letter from the leadership of the legislature, President Cameron Henry and Speaker Philip DeVilliers. And they basically sent a joint letter in February asking us to look into the possible transfer of the UNO from the UL system to the LSU system. And that has to start with the Board of Regents. Even though the legislature has to approve it, that that study and the beginning of that process starts with the Board of Regents.
So that's what I wanted to know about the study. You recommended that the study be approved, or did you recommend that UNO be included in the LSU system?
We basically recommended that there could be a transfer, but we also had some recommendations to go along with it. So we had seven recommendations that we think should be part of the process if it's to happen. And we included that in our report. It's important to know that we were pretty much given almost a year to do this study. But we understand the financial straits that the University of New Orleans is in at this point, and we didn't want to delay. We already had a lot of data, and we didn't want to delay a report to get to the legislature before the session starts in the middle of April.
So while I was under the impression, and a lot of people were, that it would take a year to determine this, basically it's already been determined, and a recommendation, correct me if I'm saying anything wrong, Darren, has been passed on to the legislature, and the recommendation is that UNO be added to the LSU system. Did I say anything wrong there?
The recommendation was that we're suggesting that we move the UNO into the LSU system with certain recommendations to take place that the Board of Regents would like to monitor. The next process will take place through the legislative session. Now, whether or not that bill is done during the session or not, we don't know. I'm assuming because of the haste of the letter from the leadership of the legislature that a bill will be filed during this legislative session by one of the representatives from the New Orleans area.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're talking to Darren Meyer with the Board of Regents about their vote to include UNO recommendation, vote that would made the recommendation to include UNO into the LSU system. What is it that the Board of Regents, the conditions that they'll be looking for as they monitor this process and the bill that will no doubt be presented during the session? And also we'll talk about the whole four different systems in general. 504-260-187. If you have any questions or comments, 750, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, 4 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Darren Meyer, member of Louisiana Board of Regents. They voted yesterday. Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, to fast-track their recommendation to move UNO into the LSU system and so it can be addressed this legislative session, if that's the case. And it is accurate?
That's pretty accurate. I mean, like I said, we had up to a year to do a report. We decided, since the universities report to us anyway, we had a lot of data. We meet with administrative teams on a regular basis. The academic and the financial sides report to the Board of Regents on a regular basis. So we had a lot of data.
I'm just watching the clock here, Darren. I'm concerned. What are your concerns, or what is the Board of Regents going to be looking for and monitoring as the legislative process goes on to move UNO into the LSU system? What do you want to see? What are you looking for?
Obviously, we'll wait for the bill to be addressed, introduced, but we're looking for our recommendations. There were seven recommendations in our report. We want an in-depth forensic financial audit from an outside accounting firm. We want a collaborative engagement between the systems. So we want the UL system as well as the LSU system to and campus leadership to meet on a regular basis regarding this transition. We also want a transition team. A formal transition team, hopefully to include members of UNO alumni and the business community in the New Orleans area. We don't want it to be as much statewide as we want the New Orleans area's focus. And we want an outside source to assess academic programs, and as well as outside source to look at facilities. There's some significant deficits regarding to facilities on the UNO campus, deferred maintenance and so forth. We also know that this transition would include compliance from SACS, which is the accreditation body for the universities in the South. And we want some data-informed benchmark reporting. We want some reporting quarterly regarding the status of this transition from one system to the other. So that's the seven recommendations that we're requesting in our report.
I would hope, sir, that you can come back and spend an hour with us, because this is extremely important to me, as it is, I think, to the New Orleans area, about the viability of UNO, sustainability of UNO. Maybe I don't know what I don't know, but to me, I don't care if it's under the LSU system, as long as UNO is there and does provide The opportunity that it afforded me, Diane Newman, Newell Norman, Clancy Dubose, so many other people. Clancy said it built the middle class in New Orleans, and I firmly agree with him. I think it did. I want you to come back, and we'll also talk about these four systems and why do we have four systems. It would seem to me, if you're looking at economies of scale, and I know everybody wants to be their own thing, but it would seem like it would make sense to have one university system in the state. And from there, you could maybe have economies of scale, have more consistency in the operation of the facilities. Will you come back and spend an hour with us?
Would love to.
Thank you, sir. Jordan will be in touch with you. Darren Meyer, member of the Louisiana Board of Regents. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. More than one in five Americans provide unpaid care for a loved one. We'll talk about the important work these caregivers do and talk about some resources to help you with burnout. Tommy Tucker, stay with us, WWL.